Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Joe Wunderly. Joe is a songwriter from Ohio, now living here in Nashville. His album Here to Stay just came out this year.
If you are listening to this episode on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances from all of our guests, including this week's guest, Joe Wunderly. Subscribe, give those videos a like. It helps us out a ton. Check it out. Like, no, there's like no lead in or anything. We just hit the ground running and we just cut in at various points. Poor Alexa does all of the work here. She's like, I know.
Cheers,
I do all
Alexa.
Yeah. We wouldn't pull this off. There's no way.
These two idiots. Not a snowflake's chance in hell. When did you get into town, man?
We got into town, I think Monday. Okay. Monday night.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm pretty late.
Yeah. What are you like? Are you usually, because you're out of Ohio, right?
Well, no, actually, I grew up in Ohio, but I live just not far down the road in Madison.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm here like it seems like nowadays like 2 months out of the year.
Gotcha.
Maybe.
And yeah. Except for some reason, I always got the feeling that we've met a good amount of times, just, you know, whether it's at shows or whatnot, you know?
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I didn't realize that you were like based out of here now.
Yeah, well, I am. Yeah. I moved here about, 3-4 years ago.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
How are you liking it? Like what's the verdict at this point?
I love Nashville. It's one of my favorite cities to be in, and it's a lot of fun.
It's a fun spot. I mean, so we only moved here. We moved here in 2018, so we only moved here like 7 years ago, and it's fun. It's a cool city.
What part of Ohio are you from?
I grew up outside of Akron in a small town.
Okay.
Called Norton.
Nice. Norton.
Yeah.
Nice. What
do you see, like, music scene out there?
Not really. No, I mean, in Akron, Akron's got a good scene in Cleveland. Yeah, okay. But nice. I mean, I did grow up in a small town and stuff, and
gotcha.
But Cleveland's got a good music scene. It did back then, at least when I was living there.
And yeah,
a lot of my friends from there actually moved down here about the same time. And I've been wanting to move here for a really long time and ended up finally making it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tried moving down during the pandemic and everything, and then kind of got stuck in the Kentucky border and stayed there for quite a while. And then... eventually made my way down.
Nice. What was the music scene like out there? What kind of stuff?
Out in like Cincinnati, Kentucky?
Yeah, like kind of growing up, what was the stuff that you were around?
I don't know, just a kind of mixed bag, anything punk, metal, and
nice.
Some, like, I don't know, just sitting on the porch, finger picking and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like all of us, you know, we're all exposed to this kind of music in various degrees, but it's interesting to hear everyone's musical backgrounds, because it can be so, for the most part, most people don't grow up playing this kind of music. You have to find your way into it.
Yeah.
You're obviously exposed to it in different degrees, but the background thing is always fun to hear, because you got some kids who were big into the punk stuff or big into, like, you know, we had the big math rock scene out in SoCal, and like all over the place. Yeah. What was your way in for this kind of stuff?
I don't know. I started hearing just a couple friends of mine were into like bluegrass and stuff, and then I found some old blues records and stuff, and heard Mississippi John Hurt.
Oh, then it was
for the
all
first
over.
Time. Yeah, and then I was like, oh man, I got to learn how to do that. And I didn't like using picks anyways, and started listening to his stuff. I got a box set of his CDs, and just started trying to learn all those songs by listening to him. And
were you writing songs at that point in life, or was it?
I was just starting to. I mean, I was like a teenager then, and I think I started writing songs like shortly after that.
Nice.
Yeah,
it is wild to see how people get into that stuff in different ways, and it's a lot of times I find it's one particular artist that kind of like piques your interest in whatever it is. Like, I know Brian's big obsession as a kid was Stevie Ray Vaughan. Amongst others.
That was a big
amongst
one
others,
for me,
but
yeah.
And it's always, I mean, it's funny now, because I mean, listen, I've played a lot of music with Brian, and it's, you know, that stuff is in there. It's all, it doesn't leave you, but at the same time, it's you. you take it in, and then eventually, I guess, hopefully, the idea is you can kind of process it and use it in a creative way. But I do feel like when you're young, you just sort of have to, there's usually those artists that you latch onto mm-hmm. that for whatever reason help you kind of kick the door down.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And it's so different for different, you know, for different people, whether it's Mississippi John Hurt or Stevie Ray Vaughan, but yeah. What people find in that stuff is intriguing to me to see kind of what the secret sauce is.
Oh, know? Yeah.
So that was your way in for that kind of roots.
Yeah.
Roots
sort of music. I just wanted to learn finger picking. I just like, I kind of hated using guitar picks. Like, mm-hmm. So after I heard Mississippi John Hurt, I was like, all right, I'm done with those. And then,
I lost the pick recently too.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's all right. Way to be. And then, I don't know, like, I heard Woody Guthrie and started, I took a bunch of his CDs from the library and, mm-hmm. Never returned those because it was so good and
nice.
It was just felt so important. And
yeah, you can't give those back once you get them, you know.
Yeah, and I can't go back to that library probably either. But
yeah, well, you know what? Some things are worth it. You know, you pick your battles in life.
Right, but stuff like that. I don't know. I just always liked. Kind of spoke to me and mm-hmm. hearing the words and found Bob Dylan and stuff and because I didn't really think of myself as a singer too much, but I heard these guys and it was like, all the, my uncles and stuff were like, oh yeah, these guys sound like, they're like, Bob Dylan sounds like a vacuum, like when he's singing, but, or I think he said something like he sings as good as a vacuum or whatever, but, I don't know. That was just, the music was so good and the lyrics are so good that, I was like, all right, I guess I could start singing.
What was your entry for songwriting? Did it come before or after that music for you?
I think about the same time. Like I'd always wanted to write songs like when I was a kid and everything. Mm-hmm. I used to make up songs like, I still do that all the time, but just walking around, like walking down the street and just start singing something and make it up. And then I never really wrote anything down. And found my voice or whatever, I guess. Mm-hmm. It took a while before I started actually writing songs down and then trying to do it. Mm-hmm. And but I always wanted to do that and felt like I needed to.
Yeah.
And just hadn't really fully committed to trying it yet. So
do you feel like now you have a process for it, or is it still sort of in the ether, so to speak?
It's sort of both, I guess. I a little bit have a process. Usually it just comes from somewhere. I get an idea mm-hmm. and it's kind of the same thing. Like I'll be walking around and start singing something or a tune will pop in my head. And then, but now I just try to chase it and write it down and kind of just shut myself off from the rest of the world if I can and mm-hmm. try to just write the whole thing in like one sitting if I can. And, just work on it and not really talk to anybody for as long as I can avoid talking to people. And I'll just work it out until I think I got at least one draft. And then mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll come back and change it. And sometimes I'm happy with how that is. And
Yeah. I feel like I'm sure this is something that changes for everyone over time or at least for most of us. I've kind of had a bit of the opposite experience in life at this point for me. Now I sort of meditate on songs as they come and I don't put so much time into the way I describe it. And I forgive me if you're listening, you've heard me say this before, but I always think of it like ideas coming through like a door.
Oh yeah.
Like puzzle pieces almost mm-hmm. coming through the door. And sometimes the puzzle comes through rather complete.
Yeah, totally.
And it's just kind of, we've all experienced that as songwriters. And you sit down and just all of a sudden there's the song within 45 seconds. It's like, and you can't mm-hmm. even really explain it. And I think as a younger person, I used to think that meant that the quality of the puzzle itself was greater. And I think as I've gone along, I've come to the realization that just means that the puzzle pieces come through at different times.
Like greater if it all comes out.
Yeah, if it all comes out at complete. And I think as I've gotten older and I've done this for longer, I've realized that it just means that they come through the door at different times. And sometimes they're going to come more complete and it's less work on your end to fit the rest together. And other times you're going to have to sit with them for a while and make them work. And to me, I at this point in life, I really don't think that it's... There's not like a right or wrong way in that regard. I think they come through at different times.
I usually find like the ones that I really have to force to like make work are usually the ones I end up like liking less.
Oh, for sure. And that's for me, that's what I found is like
the ones that just come out naturally. That's always the one I'm like really stoked on.
I found what I do to kind of mitigate that. Cause I think you're completely right. For myself, at least I found that I don't, it sounds sort of silly and maybe, you know, hippy dippy, but like, I don't force it. I'll just sort of meditate on the song. And like, there's a song right now that I've been working on for, probably a month now. Mm-hmm. And, it's finished, so to speak. I mean, the melody's there, the harmony's there. I'm really happy with it. But for the longest time, I had no idea where the lyric was coming from. Like who, for me, I write in character. So I just didn't know I had no character in my head as to who this was. And to me, as a younger person, that would have sat with me poorly. You know what I mean? I would have just want to put my fucking nose to the grindstone and like just fucking finish it. And I couldn't.
Who is this guy?
Yeah, exactly. Like just to get it done because I liked it so much. And it would have bothered me that it wasn't coming naturally. And I think at this point in life, at least, I can sit with that for however long and not worry about it. And then the other day I'm just sitting down at the piano and there it is. And there's the angle. And it's I mean, it's not done yet, but... Okay, we're that close, and
it's just another piece of the puzzle. You're like, here's the outline now. I can kind of see you got the border.
Yeah, put and together. I think there's some utility in not forcing it. I think because I think you're totally right. If you sit
just
down
wait until it
and
comes.
If you sit down and just try and I think there's definitely value to the routine of writing.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. That's something that at this point in life I've gotten kind of away. I used to be really good at it, but I do think that there is value to the routine of like keeping the pipes clean, so to speak.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you have do you have routine with your writing?
Not necessarily. I try to just like if I find time where I can like actually if I'm by myself and have time to like work on something and I got an idea, I just try to just chase it all the way down and figure it out. And it's kind of it's almost a little bit, it is like doing a puzzle, and I love doing crossword puzzles and stuff. So
same.
It's like, you kind of get stuck in it.
Scratch
like,
that same itch.
Oh, I got to just get that last piece. And it's I don't know. It's fun. And it's kind of maybe a little addicting somehow.
Oh, for sure.
Like you're, it's just something really fun to do. And, the same thing though, like, some songs I'll write it and like, I know what I want it to be about or like where it comes from and I won't have the words for it all the way. And I'll have like, part of my process, I guess I have like, I'll try it once I get on like paper, like, and, then I kind of like, I have like a weird, like, it looks like a football play sort of thing. I'll circle stuff and make arrows and like be like, this line goes over here. And this is like, I know it's going to change like
that's
at some
really
point, but I have like a placeholder there. And then
there's like a visual representation of it as you move it around.
Yeah. And I kind of can see where I'm like, all right, I know I'll even just write something really like, really faint like you would in a crossword puzzle or something you're not certain on yet.
That's brilliant.
And I'm like, I'm going to change that later. I know I'm going to, but this is the best I got immediately. And then I'm going to move on and then maybe I'll just completely lose it when I get to the end of it because sometimes I would just write too much for something. And sometimes that splits into two songs and then sometimes I just got to chop out like multiple verses or...
That's brilliant though. I like that a lot. I've always found when I write, I used to do a lot of writing longhand, and I would find that for me, it's always line based. So I would, you know, whether it's syllable count or whatever it might be, I'll write in lines, and then it's a lot of moving pieces around. And I've found one of the things I started doing several years ago, which I love now, which seems weird, is I actually now do a lot of it on my phone because I can just, it's so easy to move things. Cause it is, it's like exactly your point. It's like cutting and pasting different things. Whereas for me, I used to have to actually physically do that. Now it's so much easier cause I can work through it and actually see it in real time, which is so, so nice.
All right,
but yeah, so it's, I love that. I love the sort of mapping of it in that way. Cause to me, that's, I always do it in lines. I don't necessarily track it like that. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of do it in lines. I kind of know I don't know. Another thing I do is I don't usually pick up my guitar at all until I think I have a complete draft or something.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting.
Cause I'll hear the whole thing in my head and then I'm be writing the melody and kind of have the format figured out. Like in my head, I know how it should go. Mm-hmm. And then,
When you're writing it, do you have like a general idea of what the music's going to sound like, or do you just completely worry about it later?
No, yeah. I mean, like I have a melody in my head usually, and I know what the chords are going to be because I don't make up anything too fancy usually. So I'm like,
it's usually the best songs. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I know what it's going to go like, and I know exactly like the melody, and then I kind of just try to write it all so that it fits, because sometimes when I pick up the guitar and I try to sing it like before I'm done writing the song.
Yeah.
Then I'll lose something, or I'll forget the melody somehow when I start adding the guitar. But if it's not done yet, I'll be worried too much on. I'll be worried too much on like a line or like a syllable or something, and try to make it fit. And I try to like make it fit itself before I even.
Yeah.
Yeah, you almost become hyper aware of the form, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And then I might like just change it, and then I'll forget how it was, and in my head it sounded really cool or something. I'm like, oh man,
this was great. It sounds silly, but you can almost start writing to the instrument.
Exactly.
Like, to me,
yeah.
I find I almost never write on guitar. I always write on piano, and to me, I think it's because it's more difficult in my mind to write to the instrument of piano, if that makes sense. Like I can kind of bypass that a little bit. It's probably also just because I'm really at the end of the day, a guitar player.
Yeah.
And
totally.
So it's nice to not have that part of the brain active in that, at that step of the process, you know?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. I love that. Actually, that's really interesting. I need to try that. I'm going to start. Yeah, that's another reason why I like doing this silly show is like, I just steal things from people.
Oh yeah. No, totally. Yeah. Yeah. Give it a try. I mean,
I'm going to give that a crack.
It works for me. I don't know. That's what I find works the best for me is I just wait till I think I got the whole thing done, or at least I get to a point where I'm like, all right, I'm stumped for the day. I'm going to just pick up the guitar and see what it sounds like. And then that can like kind of carry the slack a little bit, and you're like, all right, I guess I was like, because sometimes you hear it a little bit different in your head. So you just change it a little bit. But that's kind of usually how I work.
Yeah. I found when I was at different points in my life, going back to the keeping the pipes clean analogy, I used to find that I would sit down for usually it was about like 10 minutes a day where I would just sit down and just write, and whatever came out, I would do it on paper, and I would just always throw it away at the end of the day. There was no intent of keeping anything. It was just to keep just to go through the process of doing the thing. So when that idea does come through the door, there's nothing in the way, so to speak. You can just, again, like the pipes are clean. There's nothing in it that's going to obstruct it. And then what was interesting through doing that, which I no longer really do, and maybe I'll pivot and go back to that at some point, but I would always find that within that mess of shit that you're coming up with, maybe there's like a line or two that you like. Maybe there's like one idea in there that you think, oh, I could use that later. And that is one of the things that, again, as you do this and you learn and your processes change, not doing that at this point in life, I find that that's the thing that you miss is you don't find those random little gems of things.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I just find that again, at this point, I like the process of kind of just meditating with the song and just being able to sit with it.
Yeah. Same here. I mean, I think that's the best. Cause like I used to do that too. And I don't know, I'd have boxes and boxes of like scraps of paper and whatever I could find, and like a receipt or like a napkin or something, and writing stuff on it. And just like, I don't know. And I end up spilling coffee on everything. And then
Yeah.
It stacks up and I'm the phone, horribly
dude,
organized.
The way to do
so,
it now.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah. So I use my phone a lot to write stuff on there. Cause I can just, it's right there and you can write immediately instead of like on a back of a receipt.
That's
that you're
the other
thing.
And this,
be hard
maybe
to
this
read.
Is just because my handwriting is just shit. But like another thing that I like about doing it that way too, is this is sounds silly, but I can type a hell of a lot faster than I can longhand something.
Oh yeah.
And so true, I just feel like if when you are in that moment, there's nothing worse than when you're in that creative moment and something out of your control is obstructing you.
Right.
And to me, I do like the fluency of sitting down with an idea and okay, there it is. I can just go on to the next thing. There's not that, okay, let me take 5 seconds to write this out. Again, maybe I just need to work on my handwriting a little bit, but I do enjoy that part of it. It's such a strange, like concept to even think about with any kind of creative endeavor is an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I got another, I use another process thing that I do is, I really like writing on computer paper.
Oh, okay.
And before the song's like finished.
Like printer paper?
Yeah, printer paper. Before the song's finished, I bought a whole stack of computer paper, printer paper, yeah. I guess. And because it feels less like permanent than like a notebook or something.
Yeah, you can just like throw it away.
Yeah,
that's
it's
what
like
I used to do. Yeah,
I feel like it's like, I don't know, like paper feels so precious, usually like a notebook or something and the space in there. And and then I can be like, all right, well, I don't have to, you know, it's like.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Gets rid of some like, of the blocks like that you put up for yourself.
Yeah,
you
that's smart. Yeah, so you don't, the real estate doesn't feel precious. You can just be flippant with it and not worry about
it. Yeah, that's
right,
interesting.
Totally. Yeah.
I think that's the, one of the issues with a lot of facets of life, and this goes beyond art, but people in a lot of different facets of life can get stuck on just doing the first step because everything can seem so daunting.
All right.
Like, oh, whether it's the preciousness of a notebook and not wanting to fill up a notebook because you're like, well, I got to wait till I have a good idea to put in the notebook. It's like, no, just put it all in the notebook. just take the first step. And then you, from there, it's, I mean, I say this all the time, but it's all editing. I mean, art is just editing of ideas and trying to find it's sculpting. It's trying to figure out what doesn't belong. And I think with a lot of different elements of life, people get stuck on that first rung and they can't get past it because they're just afraid or whatever it might be to waste a page in the notebook.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, just do it and see what happens.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how I feel about it too. And, when I bought this printer paper, this last pack that I got, I bought like a 500 pack from Kroger.
Oh man.
And, I was like, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to buy the biggest pack they got and just, cause I was sick of not having any paper and like being like, I don't know, scared to use my notebook or something. Cause I don't want to, oh, it's so precious.
Yeah, it's gotta look pretty, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And I bought also one of those rotisserie chickens that they got there for like $6 or something.
Honestly, their chicken's pretty fire.
It is pretty good, yeah.
It's good.
I bought that and I set the pack of paper on the passenger seat in the van and the chicken right on top of it. And I get home and like the paper's like soaked with like the chicken juice, like it leaked out of there. And I was like, all right, well, this is why I bought it. It's supposed to be like throwaway paper almost where I can just write my ideas and not worry about it. And so it's like, I don't know. That's also nice. It kind of smells like chicken a little
that's
bit.
Good. Yeah,
too,
yeah,
and it makes
nice.
You like you get that appetite for writing.
Yeah, that's
there
good.
You go.
Yeah, dude, you don't want to throw stuff away. Paper's expensive. That's something as a kid.
I know
you
it is. Yeah,
you don't realize as a kid, paper's goddamn expensive.
I know. Yeah, and it's kind of funny. I don't know if you ever read any like. I haven't finished the series yet, so don't tell me if you have, but the ending or anything, but the Dark Tower series, the Stephen King.
Actually, it's funny. So I'm not a big Stephen King guy. My brother is, and he got me that book recently and was like, you should read this. I think you would really like this. So it's sitting on my bedstand right now to start, which is odd, but.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's like just like this one detail in there where like paper is like really rare in the future or the past or wherever it's set.
Yeah.
I haven't like picked up that series for a while. I kind of left off on like the fifth book, But yeah, paper is like really rare and it's like really precious, and you know, Stephen King's a writer and stuff, so I think he put that in there. But maybe, I don't know, like I felt that, like
it's all tainted with chicken, you know?
Yeah. Right, yeah. I felt that though. I'm like, oh man, yeah, it's kind of like this is such a rare thing, like when it feels so important, like paper does, for writing things on paper.
Oh, it does.
Like,
and it can, yeah, oh, absolutely.
Beyond just an idea, you know, you have in your head.
It's interesting how just like small little psychological things, like which type of paper you're writing on, can make like the biggest difference, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it is. Yeah. And you can feel a lot more free and open. And if you can get past that or something, I mean, for me, I felt like the notebook is like so important.
It's heavy.
And
it's heavy.
It's a huge weight. And it's like, oh, if I put it in here, it's permanent and I can't change it. Or,
when I die, they're going to find this on me. And it's like, but good. Even the shit that I'm not going to use.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And I think that I sort of say that jokingly, but I think that that's something as well, that once you get a peek behind the curtain, so to speak, it's really freeing, because all of the greatest artists, whether it's songwriters or whatever form they're working in, the first draft of everything is shit, so to speak. And not always. I mean, that's sort of as the saying goes. But in reality, I mean, I think getting comfortable with, okay, here are these people for whom I have a tremendous respect in whatever form that they're working in. Everything that you do at first is by definition a first draft, and it's not all going to be.
That's true,
you're not going to use everything. I mean, and so just kind of once you start to understand that, I think it becomes a lot more freeing for you as a creative person to realize, like, oh, everyone's doing the same thing, and I think that that can be something that is really eye opening for a lot of young people, especially when you start going down that creative journey. You realize that, oh, there is no one size fits all process for this. Everyone's sort of blindly feeling around in the dark. Now, you can uncover and you can discover and you can find routines and habits and sort of, you know, habitual processes that work for you and that yield a result that you like, but everyone's still trying to figure out their own way of going about and doing that. And to me as a young person, that was a huge feeling of relief, because you see and hear and just experience these people who make tremendous things in art, and you think, how the, like, I can't fucking do that. And then you realize that no, it's only because they've figured out their process for feeling around in the dark, and you just haven't yet. For me at least, that was such a freeing feeling to experience that.
It's different for everybody. So like, finding your own process and what works for you. And I don't know, we're all probably a little bit weird and have like strange neuroses and ways that we go about.
Oh, for sure.
about doing that stuff.
Anyone who listened to the show knows that both Brian and I are very guilty of that.
Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah. So you had the new album come out this year.
Yeah.
What was the sort of arc of writing that album? Is it all newer stuff? Is it stuff that you had been holding on to for a little while?
A lot of it had been like I had written already. I guess I wrote all of it before I recorded it. but a couple of the songs were like 2-3 years old. And one of them, actually, the last track, which we did a video of right now, Funny Old World, I wrote that song about like 10 years ago. And just thought about bringing it back because I was like, wanted to have one more song on there that was like new. And I tried recording it like 10 years ago at my old apartment in Cleveland, and I sounded way different back then and played way different. And but I thought about the lyrics, it just popped in my head and I wanted to try it again. So I played it completely different one day and I was like, I want to re-record that song. Because I never released it officially because it was like pretty bad back then. Pretty terrible. So
do you find when you go back to songs that you've written a while ago that you can still find something new in them, or do you or does it feel almost like you're having to like relive something that you've already put out into the world? Does that make sense? It's hard to describe. Like
that makes sense. And sometimes I'll find like something new in it, because like sometimes I try to usually write in I don't know if it's like not super vague, but like a not extremely specific for mm-hmm. some songs. So it could be maybe like it could be for like anyone could like kind of jump into it and feel.
Yeah.
It could be about them or something, you know, instead of just about me or my experiences and everything. And,
yeah, I like that.
And but sometimes it's really personal or something too, and then I would be maybe reliving some stuff. And but other times, like I'll come back to something and I'll be like, oh, this, I could reinterpret something that I wrote because I made mm-hmm. it vague enough.
Yeah.
And maybe I didn't even think about what I was. I don't know.
Yeah, I find that when I very very rarely listen to my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, but when I do, I always feel as though it's another person that made that in a very plain way. I listened and I enjoy a lot of the stuff that I've made, and when I listen, like, oh yeah, it's a great song, that's, I like that, but I don't listen to it as, oh, that's me. It's almost like,
right,
yeah, it's just, there's just something else in the marketplace that I, yeah, okay, yeah, that's great. And I don't know why that is, but I think that in my mind, at least, that's kind of the healthy approach for myself.
Totally.
And it's, you know, it's, I think if nothing else, it just reminds you to keep pushing forward, keep going on to the next thing. 'Cause it can seem, and I'm sure this is true of a great many things in life, but with art, especially in songwriting, it can feel as though, it, once you get in the groove with something, that okay, I'm just going to stay here. This works.
Yeah,
you can just get sort of complacent in whatever the routine is that works for you, whatever that output is. You're getting, like, this is enough. And I think if there's any through line in all of the artists that I love, again, whatever world they're working in, it's just that lack of complacency, that need to push on to the next thing and see, can I get somewhere else with this? And sometimes it's going to yield great results and sometimes it's not, but just being comfortable with being uncomfortable, I think is huge. With anything you're doing in life. I mean, I just think that's such a beautiful skill. And once you learn that skill, in my mind, it's a skill that transfers to other things. Like, once you get comfortable with being uncomfortable in scenario A, well, you're going to be able to do that in scenario B. And
yeah, that's part of just learning and doing anything, a new skill or new trade or something. And you got to start somewhere.
What do you like to do outside of music? I mean, do you have other just passions or hobbies or things that you enjoy outside of music?
Well, I like... I mean, that's my main favorite thing to do, I guess, outside of, I don't know, I got a wife and,
that's a good hobby to have. Yeah.
And a couple of two stepsons and,
I love it.
And, I used to paint a lot. And
how beautiful.
A bit. And, I do construction work and, mm-hmm. and, I don't know, I like building things or doing like, woodworking a little bit, like making stuff out of whatever kind of junk I can find. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think having a physical, I find this actually with quite a few people that we've talked to on here, or just, you know, friends that I have in the music world. A lot of people who work in these sort of abstract thing, like music is such an abstract thing to love. A lot of people simultaneously enjoy something really concrete and physical that you can do with your hands, whether it's, you know, woodworking or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is sort of a nice balance there. I that's of my, you know, handful of hobbies in life. That's not really, those aren't really one of those things. And maybe I need to find a way of eventually, that'll be my retirement thing, you know?
All right. Yeah. That's a good thing to do, you know? Then. Yeah.
But like, I do think that there is really something to, the tangibleness of something like that in contrast to a creative endeavor like music.
Yeah.
Because music you can almost get lost in, and you can feel like no matter how great you're doing in music, you can feel like, am I like, could I be doing this better, so to speak?
No, I mean, it's fun to, I don't know. I like doing any kind of like creative project, I guess. Like, one day you could be like writing a song or something and then might want to build something the next day. I don't know. I always want to build stuff like, sometimes it's useless and sometimes it's like something that I need or whatever, like a table or I don't know, a shelf or something, or I don't know, build a bar out of like an old bed frame. not too long ago, because my roommate was going to throw it out. She's like, do you think this would fit in my truck? And I was like, well, you probably have to cut it in. Actually, give me a couple days before you get rid of that thing. And I got an idea because she wanted me to throw out all my other scrap wood that I had piling up. And I've been trying not to do that too much.
Do you find that the things that you learn in those other fields transfer to music at all?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think it all kind of, you put yourself in whatever you're doing, I guess. And it all kind of is somehow related in one way or another. If you're passionate about something, just go for it. And, you know, usually work pretty hard on whatever, and you might have the same sort of satisfaction at the end, I guess.
Yeah, it's so much of art can seem like chasing the dragon. And this is a lesson I've probably had to learn much later in life than I would have liked to, but so be it. I think once you get comfortable with just understanding that chasing the dragon is the fun part, you're not going to get to the dragon. Like just enjoy that. It makes the whole thing so much more fun. Cause I think a lot of it, I'm sure too, is also like dependent. Oh yeah. You can put those things down. a lot of it too, I'm sure, is just dependent on, personality, you know, like for me, like that's just the kind of person that I am. I just, if I start something, it's okay. I want to get to the end. I want to, and I think that music makes me such a better person because you just have to accept that there is no end to the thing. It's just sort of that, it's just something in life. And we all have these things in life where you're not going to get to the finish line. You just sort of have to accept it and enjoy suffering through the race. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I don't know if there's even really a question in that, but it's just, do you find that, I mean, maybe to get a little more serious or what have you, but oftentimes doing this can lead people to dark moments in their life, which is hard because music is something that we all love, but it can get you to places where you think, you know, why the hell am I doing this with my life? Like I know Brian and I have both had those moments in our lives where I mean, not to like bring the mood down, but it can get dark because you just, it's so all encompassing. And because there's no finish line in sight and you're never going to see a finish line. If you're that kind of person that Brian and myself are, it can be so deflating. Like, have you had experience with that in your life?
Yeah, I'd say I have. definitely. A lot of it's also kind of does the opposite sometimes. Like I feel like, you almost need music sometimes to get you through really dark moments. And sometimes, when I'm going through something really heavy or you lose someone in your life, you just, I don't know, we'll maybe just write about it and, sing about it. And, sometimes that, I don't know, you can feel like you can sort of encompass something or try to like, process things through it. I don't know. It can be therapeutic, for sure. I guess, in a way. But at the same time, it can be difficult to sing certain songs if they're written for specific people or events or things, you know, that are really hard.
Yeah.
Those can be harder to perform songs like that. And at the same time, you can kind of, I don't know, honor someone or immortalize something, and which that can be difficult too if it's about a terrible thing, I guess. So but I think everyone goes through some form of struggle, and everyone's gonna lose someone in their life, and I mean, we're all gonna die eventually, you know. I'm just bringing it straight all the way down. So I don't know, I think about all that stuff a lot, I guess. And at the same time, I'm just really thankful to be alive and be here and be able to meet new people and be with the people I love and, you know, kind of share that with people. And, you know,
That's a great mindset to have with it, because it can be hard, and it can be hard. Even just the life of a musician can be a struggle. I mean, anyone who does this knows.
It's a tough thing to do for a living. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's why I always do construction jobs and stuff on the side. And
I think it really helps having another shit going on, just because it takes so much pressure out of it.
It does, yeah. Then you can kind of just focus on your art when you have time to.
For sure.
Like, it's not like, oh, if I don't write this song, I'm not going to get, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really know. I've never been like really paid too much money to play music. So haven't figured that out totally.
Going back to the record a little bit, who all's on the record? Give me the rundown of how that all looked.
The record is, I got a whole bunch of people on it. I got Chris Weisbecker on there playing the drums.
There you go.
Steven Tebbs Carney on the pedal steel. Nikolai Schweitzer is on the dobro. And then Alex Buchanan on the bass.
Love it. We need to get Alex in here. I love that guy.
You definitely got to get Alex in here. He's the best.
I was actually just talking to him today. He's a great guy to talk to.
He's one of my roommates.
Oh, awesome. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. And Constance, my wife, is on there on the banjo.
Love it.
Beautiful
banjo playing, by the way. It sounded fantastic. Banjo is one of those instruments as a supporting role that can be so hard to get right in that regard, because it's such a great melodic instrument. Mm-hmm. That it can be so hard to support something with banjo, and that way it sounded great. Yeah, I love it.
She's amazing. It's so much fun to play with her, and I think she just fits right in. It's nice. I love it. It adds I think it adds a good touch to.
Yeah, for sure. This stuff sounded beautiful. Really,
and we love
really
to like travel together and do things together. So it's just fun. Is it to be able to share that?
Is it hard, because I imagine when you're playing, most of the time it's probably just you solo or the duo.
Yeah.
When you're
or with the band, it depends. Yeah.
Do you find when you're writing that you have the band in mind, you kind of have that arrangement, or is it all just to write to the song, so to speak?
I used to have more of like an arrangement idea in mind, like ahead of time, and now I just pretty much know that I always have pedal steel on pretty much everything, or dobro. And like sometimes I'll be like, this one could be either way. But some of them, I'm like, this is definite pedal steel. This is definite dobro song. And but now I pretty much kind of leave it up to the band. I've been playing with a lot of guys for many years, and like I kind of know what I want to hear, and we all kind of work together really well. And
it's nice to have that trust with someone to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really nice.
Kind of just like more or less, it's like, how many people can I get in this studio right now and record? Like,
where'd you cut it?
I recorded it at Mark Thornton's studio.
Oh, beautiful.
Nice. Sidekick, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, he's another Rusik alum. He's a
sweet. Yeah,
great talking to him.
He's the best. Yeah, we recorded the whole thing in like one day.
Did you do everything live, or did you?
Yeah, everything live.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, we did. we did 15 songs in a one day session.
I love it. I love it.
And then
that's a lot of songs for one day.
Yeah, it was cool. We still had like, 45 minutes left in the studio time, but but we were just like, all right, we'll call it at that. And I didn't think we'd make it through all of them, but
yeah,
I mean, I kind of did, but I wasn't sure we'd make it through everything. Mm-hmm. So
how do you, what is your process for editing down an album to get the songs that you want on there and to know what to leave off?
Well, that's the stuff that takes longer, I think, like figuring that out entirely. But I don't know, a couple of the songs that we did in the studio I had already recorded on other albums, so I have like unreleased versions of like other songs. And one of them that I cut off, I put the songs in order and try to find an order that had a good like sequence, I guess, or flow to it. And one of them just didn't feel like it fit on there.
Yeah.
And also I wanted to press vinyl for the first time, so I did that.
Oh, awesome.
And I know there's like a maximum of like 44 minutes, but like, or 22 minutes per side, and you start to lose fidelity and sound quality if you go too much beyond that. So I kind of used that as my guide a little bit. I was like, all right, well, I can only, you have to make each side a certain length.
Yeah. That's and then, the way it's so, it's honestly having those restrictions is so nice. Like we've done three albums and the first one was the only one that I did vinyl for, but it was, I'm so glad that I did that with the first one because I mean, to your point, having those parameters there, I think it really does help guide you in shaping the thing. And especially for me, and you might be like this too, I don't know, but I listen generally to music through albums. Like I'll sit down with an album and listen top to bottom. And so I want something that's going to flow. I want something that's going to, sounds like an album, so to speak. So kind of learning those parameters early, I think is really good because it helps you figure out that skill set of not just like kind of what goes where, but why it has to go there, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's good to have some limits for stuff like that. Cause then I don't know. I could probably just record way too many songs. I did the last album that I did before this. I did two albums at once and that took forever to put those out.
Cause we recorded two albums at once.
Well, we recorded 20 songs in like, 3 days. And,
was this in Nashville?
That was in Nashville too, yeah. Okay. That was at the Andy Corp headquarters, Black Matter Mastering.
Okay.
And my buddy Dan's basement studio sort of thing. And
nice.
Yeah, recorded that all live too and over like 3 days. And then that just took, I mean, having that much material to work with takes quite a while to figure out what goes where and
do you cut vocals live too?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah. That's you might be the only person I know in this town who does that too, because I love doing that. I don't know why more people don't do that.
I don't know why more people don't do it either. Cause everyone I hear like live in town usually just sounds so great. Yeah.
And it's also, it's like, if you're singing the melody, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know why you wouldn't want the melodic instrument interplaying with the rest of the instruments. You know, like if Brian plays something a particular way, I'm going to sing to that in a different way. And it's like, I don't know why, like, I understand sort of for fidelity's sake.
And you lose a little bit of control, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, but fuck control, who cares?
Yeah, right, yeah. No, I agree. I see both sides of the argument.
I know, again, and I think that there's different, there's different approaches to recording. So my day job is I'm a middle school music teacher.
Oh, cool.
And, awesome. And I was actually just having, I teach a music technology class as one of my classes I teach. And, I was actually just having this conversation with my kiddos this past week. Like I was explaining, like there's like two, I find that there's really kind of two trains of thought with recording. There are people who want to, for the most part, capture the sound of a room, whether it's, you know, one person with a guitar or whether it's six people in a band, you know, it's the closest thing we have to time travel. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
to be able to like close your eyes and like, you know, I was, this past week, Highway 61 is 60 years old now, which is insane.
Oh,
and
wow,
I was listening to
great album.
One of the best ever. And it's wild when you listen to things like that. I mean, this is true of, you know, this is true of all sorts of different, or all sorts of different music. I mean, this is obviously true of lots of jazz records, et cetera. But you know, you close your eyes and you're in that room from 60 years ago. And that's what that room sounded like. I mean, obviously there's the manipulation and there's the control to get it to sound like an album, so to speak.
Oh, totally,
right? Like,
yeah, man.
It's the magic trick of recording something, right? Nothing actually sounds like that. It's, if you're standing over by the organ, it's going to sound different than if you're standing over by the bass.
Oh, right.
Bass
rig,
so there is that sleight of hand that's occurring, but you know, in a perfect world, if you could sort of hover above the situation, you're experiencing time travel. And then I think there's great beauty to that. And then on the other side of the coin, you have, you know, folks like Brian Wilson or whomever who are looking to use that process of recording as its own instrument, who are looking to try to do something that you can't get people in a room and play Pet Sounds. It's not going to happen. Like, and Pet Sounds is incredible.
Right.
But that's out of the experience of human beings. You're not going to be able to get that.
Totally.
And I think that there's obviously great artistic value in that as well. I just find as a creative person, I am much more interested in the former. I like the idea of capturing something that's alive and in the moment. And we've all dabbled with both of those things. And
yeah,
you know,
totally.
It's not like they're two totally segmented. They can bleed into each other. But I like the idea of grabbing something in a room and saying, yeah, okay, that's what this is. Now let's move on to the next thing.
I like that too. Yeah. So try to catch lightning in a bottle, I guess. And then, you just go on and, I don't know. Sometimes, I'll add stuff like afterwards, like a couple of things, like, and,
yeah, same,
but, just try to get as many people as possible that are going to be on the record to record live, like all at once is mm-hmm. my favorite way to do it.
Yeah. I think there's also something just about the sound of that, for lack of a better phrase. Sonically, I think that there's a real beauty to that, because there's really, obviously you're just dealing with sonic real estate. You're just dealing with space. And when you get those things in a room, I think it becomes apparent much quicker what works and what doesn't work. If you start throwing things in afterwards, I mean, there's obviously, again, there's the beauty of, and the skill of shaping those things. You know, okay, we're going to cut this instrument, and we're going to deal with this EQ here, and we'll kind of boost this here.
Sure,
and
yeah,
you can shape it, and you can make it work in different ways, but it's so much more organic for,
yeah. Like when yeah. different players are going to play together, like, they can kind of feed off of each other for the mm-hmm. licks they're playing. And,
yeah,
can kind of like organize and arrange that ahead of time. And I mean, all the guys that I play with they're so good, and feel so thankful and lucky to play with them and record with them. And they all contribute such great ideas and like arrangements and stuff. And like, oh, maybe we go here, and then you take the top, and then like we'll split the solo here. And I don't know, they all kind of get excited and feed off of different each other's like energy and ideas and stuff. And I don't know, I just think it works. And I don't know, I don't necessarily want to do it any other way like than live if I can. And then whoever can't be there, then I like want to be there for sure, like we'll add them afterwards. But I think for lead instruments, and they'll probably disagree with me too with this, but I just think it's so cool just to have them all do it live. Some players want to redo their parts, or like, oh, I'd rather just do that a couple times. And
As a lead player, I'm always scared of like, because I'm just like a perfectionist. There's always something I want to change, and I love just being like, oh, just cut me back on that second chorus. I'll redo that.
Yeah, Brian's begrudgingly had to play many a lead live on my records.
Oh, right, yeah.
He hates it.
So you make him do it too, yeah?
Yeah.
But there's also something. We were talking about this with someone recently. I'm trying to think who we were talking about this with, but there's something kind of beautiful too about, as a listener, the skill set's so high here, right? The expectation and of your performers in Nashville, it's so high, and people are so fantastic here. There is something great, whether it's on a record or whether it's on a stage, seeing maybe not the flub, but seeing it be human.
Oh yeah.
I love it. And to me, like that is worth that's worth the cost, right? Like the cost of entry is worth it, so to speak. Like I like, as a listener, I like listening to a record or watching a show, and there are those moments of imperfection where it becomes apparent to you as a viewer that, oh, like this is something that's alive, that is alive in the moment, and mm-hmm. isn't just a robot or lifeless. There's something there, and so much of music can seem like that. That I love that. I love when people flub the guitar solo or whatever.
All right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're all human.
Yeah.
It's nice to have some. I don't know. I like the organic feel, I guess you can get from just doing something live. And I don't know. I tried like recording an album where I multi-tracked everything and had mm-hmm. everyone over at my apartment and recording it with like terrible equipment and not knowing what I was doing, and my friend mixing it, he didn't totally know what he was doing. And it just, the whole process that way takes just 10 however many instruments times longer the song is, like, so instead of like a 3 minute song, you could do that like maybe three times, and that's 9 minutes or something.
It compounds
like,
very quickly.
Yeah, it could be, you could spend like 3 hours doing like one song, and then Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and again, it's there's no accounting for taste, and everyone, you know, everyone kind of has their own ways of doing it. And I love, and I've done that too, and I enjoy it. Like the last stuff I put out was a couple years ago now.
Yeah.
We're looking to do the next record soon, and the last things we did were just a bunch of singles that I actually did with Weisbecker was part of that team.
Oh, sweet.
And we just it was the first time I'd ever approached it in that way, where it was just one track at a time, and it was fun. It was a different way to do it.
That is fun. It's a lot of fun to do it that way too. Yeah. But it's like time wise, it's like it definitely takes a lot longer.
Yeah, and you can get impatient if you're used to the other way of doing things.
Right, and I mean, if I had time to do it that way, and like I mean, it is fun to do it that way, I think too. Mm-hmm. It's all any creative process doing it, however way, it's fun, I think, and it's. You might get different ideas doing it that way too than you would if you just did it live and have a different product and stuff. So I think I haven't tried that for a long time, I guess. But I think it's cool to do it any way that works for anyone.
And I think there's also utility in trying all kinds of different things and just
definitely
and getting accustomed to trying it different ways and just seeing what you like, you know.
Actually, yeah. I did do a song like that with Ilya Portnov. Mm. He played harmonica on the whole record, and he worked, mixed like the whole thing and like with me and produced it. And, we did do a song. I did a demo of it, and he was going to play like bass harmonica on it and like regular harmonica we talked about and wanted to add some other stuff. And I was like, well, I usually record live with the band and, I don't know, like, but yeah, we'll try it.
Love it.
And, so we did that. I just like recorded guitar and vocals live, like just in his closet at his old house. He's like, this is the best sounding room in my whole house. And I was like, all right. I was like, okay. Just sang the song like once or twice through. Yeah. And then, he's like, okay, that was great. All right, cool. And, he's like, I'll, add some things to it and I'll get back to you. And, I was like, okay, all right. And then I was like, I was pretty excited about it. Cause like, I don't know. I'm kind of, I heard him play a few times and I loved what he did. And, we started like kind of talking about bass harmonica and like this band that I really like, the Harmonic Cats. It's like an old, band. Yeah. They're all like harmonica trio and they're so good. And, I don't know too many people that know that. So we're nerding out about it a little bit. I was at least like, and, I was like, yeah, I definitely want bass harmonica on a song. And, we wanted to do this. The Moon Is on a Roll Tonight is the name of the song. And anyways, like some time went by. He like texted me. He's like, I think I have the harmonica done. Like, I'm going to have Tebs in like tomorrow to play Dobro. And I was like, okay, sweet. All right. He has Tebs over to play Dobro. And I'm like, yeah, I really want fiddle on this song. He's like, I think I got somebody in mind to do the fiddle. And I was like, okay. Well, who do you want? You know, and like I was like a little bit nervous. I'm like, because I've, you know, it's weird to not be like there and be a part of the whole process. And I'd never worked with him before in that capacity or anything. And then he's like, I think I want to ask Billy Contreras. And I was like, oh, well,
sure.
Okay, yeah, if you want to ask him, I'm okay with that. if you can make that happen, that would be really cool because I have fiddle players that I love to play with. And anyways, another couple weeks go by and he texts me, hey Joe, I think I have the song done. And I was like, well, all right, but did you get fiddle on it? And he goes, yes. And then text message and I go, well, who did you get? And he's like, Billy Contreras. And I was like, dude, send it over. I got to hear this thing. Like, oh man.
That's fantastic.
And then he sent it to me and it kind of like blew my mind, like how well he mixed everything and
that's so beautiful,
kind of did the arrangement of it and production. And I was and it's a really cool special recording. We released it as a single and I'm really like happy how that turned out and would have never seen this happening in my life like maybe a few months before that because I had just met Ilya and now we like play together and tour together and play like pretty much every show we can together. And
that's fantastic.
He's been on tour with us over in Europe with Constance that. And we just went up to Canada on tour together and it's just he's become like one of my best friends in town too, so
That's good. Life throws you curveballs, yeah. Man. That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
What do you got next on the agenda? Like, what's on the horizon musically? Anything coming up?
I'm going to try to book some stuff when I get back into town. I don't have anything booked at all right now for like the immediate future, but I'm working on some stuff for, I think I'm going back to Canada in March, and we're gonna, yeah, I don't know, there's a lot of things in the works. I gotta send a bunch of emails and
you and me both, you
plan
know,
some stuff, and yeah, I'm terrible at that, so but I'll be playing some stuff in the fall here in town. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, dude, thank you so much for doing this. This was a ball. The music was really beautiful. Like, I'm really excited to hear all that stuff.
Yeah, those will come out really good.
Yeah, they sounded fantastic. And the banjo playing was wonderful, too. So thank you both. Like, this was a ton of fun.
But, thank you so much for having me over. And it's a pleasure to officially meet you guys and do this. Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
That's awesome. Okay, Alexa, do you want to grab some pics real fast before we call it good?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that was great.
Yeah.
Quick little photo shoot. Yeah, good to meet you, man. Yeah.